It's been 90 days since our last podcast. The world has changed in many ways since then. Our thoughts go out to you and we wish you and your families the very best of health. It's only a tiny step in the right direction, but PGA Tour Golf returns this week and we cannot wait. Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System podcast 117. We are discussing the Charles Schwab Challenge on the PGA Tour. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. Please be gamble aware. I'm Steve Bamford, PGA Tour preview at Golf Betting System. And with me, we have Golf Betting System's European Tour expert, Paul Williams, and Barry O'Hanrahan. It's good to have you back, chaps.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning, guys. Good to be back.
Indeed it is. Yeah, it's been a long, long time. How many days did you say, Steve? 90-something?
90 days.
90 days. A lot of water under the bridge since then.
It feels like a few years plus 90 days, doesn't it, really?
It does, very much so. And we'll discuss where we're up to in a few seconds. Let's just go through the intro quickly. Golf Betting System is our website with betting previews, masses of tournament statistics, and our predictor model, all available completely free of charge. Please subscribe to this podcast and drive the popularity of the show. Naturally, we're available on social media. On Twitter, Paul is at Golf Betting. I'm at Bamford Golf. Barry is at A Good Talk Golf. You can join our Golf Betting System Facebook group. The link is available in the description box. And please look out for the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel, where I present the Golf Betting Show every week. Please take time to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. This is the podcast currency and drives our listener numbers continually upwards. As ever, for those of you who leave a review, I will read them out at the start of next week's show, which would be the RBC Heritage if all runs to plan, if there is such a thing as a plan these days. I've got a review here, gentlemen. This one is from Mike Tullow via Apple Podcasts. He lives in the US of A. Great podcast, great information, 5 stars. As an American, this is like listening to Michael Caine talk intelligently about golf. What more could you want? Question mark.
So, Steve, the question is it you?
Who is Michael Caine?
Yeah, is it you? Is it you or me that these guys think sound like Michael Caine?
I've never got my head around that.
No, I think it must be you.
I mean, I don't know how you could get your head around it with it being so big right now, Steve. Getting a compliment like that,
mate.
Thanks for the comments, Mike. That's very nice and kind of you to take the time to write that review.
It is. It's very nice. We've got a few more to read through over the coming weeks, but I would love some new reviews from you. It really does help with the podcast just to tell Apple Podcasts that it's a popular podcast and well revered, if you see what I mean. I don't know about you guys, but my hair is just unbelievable at the moment. I've never had longer hair and it looks absolutely hideous.
I did notice that you'd left a cap on for the video.
Well, yeah, but did you see the hair sprouting out the sides of it? It couldn't contain the hair.
You look like that hobo out of Happy Gilmore, the caddy.
Yeah.
Well, no, I've got a pair of clippers here, Steve, and I've gone for a self-inflicted haircut, which has had mixed results.
My wife won't cut my hair, so I'm in trouble. Yeah. Maybe in July, you never know, Paul, we might actually get some barbers opening up here in the UK.
Get yourself on YouTube, Steve. There's plenty of self haircut videos and tutorials to get the job done. And just get the wife to do the back to finish you off, as it were.
How are you finding things in Ireland, Barry?
I was just about to say, if there's any farmers out there who listen to the podcast and are handy with the sheep shears, Steve is will pay handsomely.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd catch the flight across though. That's the only danger.
No, things are good here, as good as you can be, I guess. So we've had golf for the last few weeks for people that live close to their courses. We had a 5 kilometer. Radius that you could travel from your house, and fortunately my golf club was 4.999994 kilometers from my house, so
that's handy.
Yeah, and even if it was over the 5, I would have just drilled straight through the earth to get rid of the curvature anyway. So look, I've been able to get out and play golf, so that's been keeping me sane. It's just a nice escape from the whole thing. You know, phone goes away, out in the golf course, it's just back, feels like life is back to normal. So it's good. And it's kind of, it's fun playing casual golf. We play so much competitive golf here. You know, we get to play golf on the weekends. Usually it's like competition Saturday, competition Sunday. So going out to play casual golf has turned into midweek evenings with a couple of beers and some music playing. So it's a very, very different style of golf, but it's good fun. I mean, coronavirus cases are going down and, you know, things are starting to open up here. So just need the weather to pick back up and there'll be no complaints, really.
Brilliant stuff.
It's been crazy just from a betting perspective, hasn't it? I'm trying to go back to kind of the early days when things shut. We had the Cheltenham Festival over here pretty much the week that everything started to close down.
Mm-hmm.
And then within a couple of weeks, there was literally only American horse racing that you could bet on from Florida and Oklahoma, states like that.
And the Belarusian under-20 reserves. Of course,
The Belarusian Premier League. It was crazy, just absolutely crazy. Nothing at all for the casual punter to have a bet on, really.
Well, I don't know about you guys. I went through probably 6 weeks, 8 weeks, where I literally didn't have a bet at all.
Yeah, bet, no.
Which,
yeah, no, that's true.
Even on the closed season for golf, I'll tend to have a dabble in, you know, football or bit of racing or something, but there was literally nothing to bet on, was there? And I'm not going to get involved in the Belarusian under 20 reserves. That's just step too far for me.
The thing was, usually having a bet makes events a little bit more enjoyable or kind of adds a bit more intrigue to them. But the fact that things weren't on meant I didn't really miss that kind of bit of a buzz about having a bet on something. So the first bet I had was on the first exhibition match, the Rory McIlroy, the TaylorMade one. I backed Ricky's team because they were 2-1 in a 2-horse race. I thought it was ridiculous and they should have won it.
But, came mighty close, didn't they?
Yeah. So, but look, whatever. move on. And now we've got this major this week. It really is. The field strength is absurd.
Oh, it is mad, isn't it? What's the strength? Is it 74 or something? The OWGR.
16 of the world's top 20. I was trying to work through who weren't involved. Adam Scott, he just tends to pick his own schedule anyway. Cantlay isn't playing.
Tiger.
Tiger, of course, yeah. And one other who escapes me. I could look on the official World Golf Ranking website, but I'm not going to. But yeah, it's a loaded field. 148 players. And it's being played the Charles Schwab Challenge, which has a traditional home. It's basically the Colonial Country Club in Fort Worth in Texas. A very old-style classical golf course. And we're looking at a short golf course as well. 7,209 yards. It plays as a par 70. It's a bit of a strange one in the fact that it's classical. It's quite claustrophobic. Lots and lots of dog legs. Very similar to the course that they're going to be playing next week, which is Harbour Town, Hilton Head, the RBC Heritage, which is scheduled for next week. Very, very similar. But this golf course is a little bit strange in the fact that it features bent grass greens, the first time we've seen bent grass greens in 2020, but also it features Bermuda grass rough, and it's rare that you get that mix of bent grass putting surfaces and Bermuda grass gnarly rough, so that's something to potentially look out for. But bent grass greens, last year there was plenty of wind around, and this golf course actually played as the seventh hardest on the PGA Tour, although I don't expect it to play that tough this week with no real wind in the forecast.
No,
but yeah, I always like this tournament. I always think it's an interesting golf tournament to watch.
Yeah, it often can get windy in Texas, full stop, can't it? Yeah. It's, a lot of the Texan events that you can review over the years will feature wind, but it does add a different dynamic to it, which is quite likely to bring the winning score down, I think, this week.
Now, the interesting thing with this PGA Tour resumption is clearly professional sport in America is very limited at the moment. You've got a bit of UFC, a bit of NASCAR, but apart from that, PGA Tour is the first real organisation to get up and running. And with the dearth of betting events, globally and here in Europe, over here in the UK and the Republic of Ireland especially, what you're finding is that bookmakers are going absolutely crazy this week. And as you said, Barry, they're virtually treating it as a major. We've got Paddy Power, who have gone 10 places each way of 50 odds this week. It's the first non-major I can think of that's ever offered 10 places. I can't think of another tournament.
No, I think they did it the Players, but you could class the Players in that kind of category, couldn't you? But yes, as a regular PGA
domestic
Tour event, absolutely.
You've also got a host of bookmakers who have gone 8 places each way as well. Boyle Sports, who, as we know this year, have been really, really good in terms of their each-way places offered. But interestingly enough, William Hill, we'll go into that in a short while about William Hill. I just wanted to quickly run through the top 10 of this week's predictor model, if you wouldn't mind, gentlemen. It's something that we said that we would highlight on the podcast ongoing. Effectively, a statistical model that Paul manages and pulls together the data for, in terms of pulling together this 148-man field and just seeing who statistically comes to the front. It's tailor-made. It's actually flexible in the fact that you can use it. It's a web front end, and you can pull together your own tailor-made predictions. These are the top 10 that I came up with. 10, Rory McIlroy. 9, Kevin Na. 8, Kevin Kisner. 7, Justin Rose. You've got 3 colonial winners there, 9 through 7. Rose, Kisner and Na have all won around here. Na defending this week. 6 is Dustin Johnson. 5 is Brooks Koepka. He's available on the basis that he's also had one outing here and finished second. He's available at 28-1 this week. Kuchar at 4. Spieth at 3. There's going to be so many people backing Spieth this week. John Rahm at 2. And number 1 is Webb Simpson. Any thoughts on anyone popping out there, guys, in that top 10 that you didn't expect to see or you're pretty keen on?
I struggle with Webb full stop. I know I'm putting in the minority, but statistically, he's very, very, very difficult to get rid of this week. I mean, the model brings it out perfectly, as you said, but even just eyeballing the numbers this week, Simpson was jumping to the top of an awful lot.
You actually get a GBS score, don't you, Paul? And he's sitting just a smidge under 2,000 points. The next highest is at 1770. That's John Rahm. So, he's topped by quite a distance.
Yeah, absolutely.
A good 10%.
If you were to put this into winning totals, you'd put him at circa 20 under, I guess, and... a two or three shot win. So, I can see why he's been popular this week. I do struggle with him personally, but that's just a personal thing. And Spieth's got a fantastic record around here, hasn't he? And as you said, he's going to be fantastically popular this week, despite the way that he was playing prior to the break. And this is the big dilemma this week, isn't it, of course, is do we consider how players were playing prior to the suspension of PGA Tour. Do we look at the small amount of data that we've got from the likes of the Outlaw Tour, etc., that's been played in the meantime? Yep. Do we disregard it all completely? And I guess going back to the predictor, you've got a choice here because we've included those results from those minor tours over the last few weeks. We've also included the data from the likes of the Arnold Palmer Invitational, the Honda Classic, the WGC Mexico and Puerto Rico, which were played the final 3 weeks prior to the suspension. So I guess there's different ways to spin it and cut it yourself. And the predictor actually allows you to do that this week to your heart's content. So I'm sure you can play around with it and come up with a different set of answers to the ones that we've got here. But it all seems quite plausible where you've come to in terms of your conclusions, Steve.
Where are you at, Barry, in terms of thoughts around form post suspension of the PGA Tour? Are you holding that in any stead at all? You're not interested. You're just going to go on players that you think will fit. Things that you've seen on Twitter or Instagram, or where are you at? I heard Pat Mayo last week and Jeff Feinberg, sorry, not last week, yesterday, saying on their particular podcast that Jeff's very keen on younger, non-parenting sorts, that he calls them range rats, guys that have just been out there, you know, your Sungjae Im's, just to keep going and playing well on the basis that all they've been doing is playing golf effectively.
I think that's a really good approach, because they have the time. The guys with families will have, like, dove into having that extra family time, which is a big bonus for them that they ordinarily wouldn't have. You'd think that would have more of a negative impact on their golf game than a positive, but then it could change their whole mindset by, you know, having a good time with the kids and family. So
yeah,
I think it is a good angle though to choose to, let's say, those younger range rats who, you know, they'll see this as a serious opportunity and be kind of gunning to, you know, get a win in a really strong field. They might perceive themselves to have an advantage over those family guys as well. So, you know, just that little extra ping of motivation. I haven't gone out and, you know, trolled through Twitter and Instagram and seeing who, you know, see who's posting stuff and who's out playing and practicing. And that's not what I've done. I think anybody that was playing really well beforehand can, you know, have a little look back on that and, you know, draw from that, and hopefully that'll help them kickstart the game again. They're in a better position than anybody who was playing poorly when the break happened.
Yeah, although they've had a chance to spend the last 3 months correcting whatever issue that they may have had. It's a dilemma, isn't it?
It's also hard.
Whether you can actually transfer that to the competitive side of things. The other thing I was going to ask you, Barry, I mean, Paul and I have a hack around our local golf club, and we understand the basics of golf, but you clearly play at a quite a good level from an amateur perspective. How is this new setup in terms of courses going to affect tournaments, you think? So clearly, no crowds, we've got no grandstands, and we've got no executive areas, no stands, no impediments effectively on the golf courses moving forward. They're going to be pure golf courses that that you and I would play at if we went to play. Well, I'm not talking in terms of actual agronomy and the speeds, but in terms of the look and the feel.
Well,
how do you think that's going to, in terms of what we should be looking for, do you think that changes what we've been seeing up to this point in terms of skill sets?
Well, you know, speaking from my vast experience of playing in front of at most 3-4 people at a time, to people in my group, I think it'll be interesting to see the guys play without crowds, to not have those, let's say, buffers to stop the ball or trample down the grass. So I think you're going to have to add a little bit more weight to accuracy off the tee. Short game as well, because, you know, if the crowds are, you know that little bit off the green, fine, but, you know, that little bit further back, you don't have the grandstands anymore, so you don't have this ability to grandstand your ball, you know, just airmail it over the green if there's water short. So I think it kind of goes back to a little bit more of that childhood way of playing golf, or pre-pro way of playing golf, or pre-elite pro level way of playing golf, where there's crowds and grandstands. So maybe that, you know, back to that Feinberg angle about the, you know, the recent college grads who are used to playing in tournament conditions, you know, and amped up pressure, but without crowds and without grandstands. You know, this could play into their hands. It's gonna be really cool to see, because I enjoyed watching the two exhibition matches where the guys were mic'd up and there was no crowds. You just get them. You get to see them play the golf course, and that's it. There's nothing else interfering with it. And I think it'll be cool for us to, as viewers, to see some of these golf courses without the crowds there. So you see them as they're intended to be played on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I agree with you in the accuracy element. It'd be interesting to see. I don't know if we'll get a stat of it at the end, but interesting to see how many additional penalties are incurred for lost balls this week. Because clearly, with a lot of spectators and spotters and officials, there's ways and means of very wayward shots getting found quite quickly, but with far, far fewer players, far, far fewer people on the course,
yeah,
some of these seriously wayward shots may well take some finding.
And there's going to be no trampling, is there?
No, absolutely.
Yeah, this is it.
You know, going back to the hack, yeah, hack that you and I had, Steve, you know, we slightly off the fairway, kind of 40 yards.
No, we were losing. Sorry, you were losing balls quite a few, weren't you?
But we only needed to be 10 yards off the fairway.
Them, could you?
Absolutely, no, 10 yards off the fairway, and you're struggling to find a ball. So, you know, clearly these professionals are far better and far more capable than that. But so I'd be surprised if there's a significant jump in the number of lost balls and penalties incurred as a result of that this week.
That combined with it being the first one back, so we're going to have some. You're going to see some wild drives this week. They'll just creep in. So yeah.
And these are tight fairways, very very tight at Colonial.
Yeah.
So my gut feel on this was it did for me put a premium on guys that have got a very strong, accurate driving game. And also, when you just look at previous winners of this, your likes of Rose, Kisner, Kevin Na last year, they had, in a previous outing, been very, very strong off the tee. I'm talking single-digit driving accuracy at a tight golf course in the build-up. So, you know, that put me off a lot of players, it has to be said. We'll go into a bit more detail around that in a second. Just want to highlight a couple of things. I'm going to put a link in the description box to our form stats that are available for free at Golf Betting System. I know it's something that some of you won't have used in the past if you were a regular listener. Just going to put a link through to our form stat sheet. And also there's a combi stat sheet, which is useful, which basically combines current form. So that's form before the suspension, allied to course form. So that's quite a useful tool that Paul and I use a lot. Secondly, I just wanted to highlight, and we were talking at the top of the show about bookmaker promotions and bookmaker offers. Right now, it's clear that William Hill have proactively gone for the jugular this week in terms of the Charles Schwab Challenge. As of now, and we're recording this 11 o'clock over here in the UK, we're finding that William Hill are pretty much top price on every player up to the 55-1 mark. That being Gary Woodland, Matthew Fitzpatrick and defending champion Kevin Na. So they are top price on every player from Rory McIlroy up to that 55-1 spot. Also, and this is a new departure for William Hill, they have gone 8 places each way this week of 50 odds. And just when I was pulling together my tips yesterday morning with Paul, 3 of the 4 players I tipped up, we tipped up on William Hill because you're getting that great balance of fantastic prices and 8 places each way. Unbeatable, effectively, this week. We've got an offer available at Golf Betting System this week with William Hill where you can have an expanded or enhanced bet £10 or €10 and get £40 or €40 in free bets for UK and Republic of Ireland residents, new customers. You have to sign up via your mobile phone. You also have to quote the promo code W40 Whiskey 40, and you will receive receive £40 in free bets once you have placed your qualifying first £10 bet. Full terms and conditions available at Golf Betting System. But you have to say this week, new departure for William Hill, fantastic odds, and that enhanced new customer offer available at Golf Betting System. Long may it continue from William Hill. Okay, I've gone through the predictor model, gone through the best bookmaker this week. Let's actually get into some of the nitty-gritty around this tournament. As I said, 7,200-yard golf course. It's classical, it's tight, it's an old-style affair. Looking at the fairway width, we were talking about that a second ago in terms of accuracy off the tee. At 300 yards, Barry, this plays on average Colonial at 27 yards wide. Now, comparing that to somewhere like TPC Sawgrass, that's 30 yards wide at Sawgrass. And if we went back to Bay Hill at 300 yards, 33 yards wider average. So we're looking at 6 yards thinner in terms of fairway width here, Colonial compared to, say, Bay Hill. So they are thin old fairways to hit. And with this gnarly Bermuda grass rough, all you read from players is that it makes recovery shots difficult in terms of flyers. And as we know, Bermuda rough and getting flyers is something that pros don't like at all. Yeah. Just that lack of consistency when you're standing in the rough above an approach shot. Is it going to fly? Is it not going to fly?
Yeah, and these wayward shots that would have ordinarily landed in trampled down areas are just going to land in thick, juicy rough this time, aren't they? So
it's great. I love it. Punish them. Yeah. They should, you know, it's going to be good to see.
Yeah.
They're playing for big money. Let's see them work for it, shall we? Mm. Winning scores here. Kevin Na 13 under last year. That was a particularly gnarly renewal, has to be said, in terms of wind. 2018, Justin Rose won at 20 under. Kevin Kisner at 10 under in 2017 and Jordan Spieth at 17 under in 2016. I think that we are going to see a winning score of between 17, 18, 19 under par this week. I think if you're firing in straight 65s, you're not going to be too far away. No. Anything around the sort of 66 mark is going to be day in, day out across the 4 days. It's going to be close to getting you in the each way money, I think.
Yeah, I can see that.
It's more than scorable round here when the conditions are tactile. And yesterday it looked like Thursday could be gusting up to 20 mph. Overnight, that forecast has changed. It looks like for 72 holes, we are going to see sub 10 mile an hour wind. So it's scorable. The other thing is, and this is something to bear in mind, up to 35 degrees Celsius in terms of air temperature. So that says to me, especially on the basis that there hasn't been any significant rain here since the 25th of May, I think we're going to see firm running fairways, pretty gnarly rough because they did have over 180 millimetres of rain in May, but they are going to have to water these greens. Mm. So I think the greens are going to be quite receptive.
In the mornings, yeah. I guess by the end of the day, they're going to be drying out.
Baking and out, yeah.
Which might make for an interesting Sunday afternoon shootout for the final few groups.
Do you think that would give somebody an opportunity like to hold a bet or two back for Sunday and maybe look for somebody to do a Sunday charge and post a score from a few groups back?
Quite possible. Potentially.
Quite possible. Because you can get some low scores around here, Steve, can't you? You can get people in the very low 60s when conditions allow.
Yeah, I think Nar shot 61, didn't he? I think he's course record holder, guessing on that one. Yeah. So don't shoot me, listeners, if I've got that slightly wrong.
I remember him shooting 62. He shot 62 when I was on Charlie Hoffman first round leader a couple of years
of course.
I remember that.
Three of the last four winners of this actually went into the final round in first spot. Kevin Kisner was fourth, but you go back, you've got Adam Scott coming. Effectively, it tends to be players within the top four last 10 years that win this. We did have Adam Scott winning back in 2014. He was 11th entering the final round. But yeah, this is it. We don't know, do we? With new course. I even read Mark Leishman say something last week about he's... concerned about the lack of crowds because A, he doesn't practice a lot, and B, so he's not used to playing in front of no crowd. Mm-hmm. And how's that going to affect his mentality and being able to get up for the actual competition? So, you know, there's going to be... We don't know sitting here, do we? We're only going to find this out once the action actually starts.
It's going to affect players different, isn't it? Some players clearly thrive off the atmosphere. Some of them completely block it out. They're just focused on their game. And perhaps those kind of more stoical types are going to feel more comfortable in a less atmospheric conditions.
On an old style golf course, which Colonial is, from a skill set perspective, we also see both kinds of player that can win this. So basically short game experts that are hot with the scrambling, and hot with a putter of one around here, Jordan Spieth being one of them, Chris Kirk. We've also seen pure ball strikers win here. Adam Scott in 2014, Justin Rose in 2018. And as we, you know, classical golf courses, old style, you just get that. You know, it's basically course management. It's basically who plays best on the week tends to get the job done on courses like this. just looking at the key skill sets in terms of traditional stats, so, you know, driving distance, driving accuracy, whatever, taking the last 10 winners, driving distance, the average across the 10 winners, last 10 winners, 36th. So that just says power doesn't really tame Colonial. The most outlandish statistic in terms of the one that tends to be the closest to look at is putting average, strokes per putts per GIR 8th. That's the most consistent stat across the last 10 winners. In terms of strokes gained, taking Gnaar, Rose, Kisner and Spieth last 4 years, strokes gained off the tee 14th, averages out at strokes gained approach 14th, strokes gained around the green 21st, strokes gained tee to green 4th, strokes gained putting 7th. Doesn't really tell you a great deal. The last two winners, though, Rose and Gnaar, have both topped strokes gained approach the 2 years that they won.
Yeah. I think in a nutshell, from what you said, is it isn't about distance. And from there, it's a variety of different types of game can contend, from high greens and regulation players to those who just putt particularly well on the week. Which is often the case, isn't it? On a classical kind of track, you often do see different types of players come to the fore. Which
Bomb and Gouge is as effective here as anything else. I mean, look at Tony Finau last year before that, Brooks Koepka. But ultimately, they haven't actually won. It's been a Gnaar, it's been a Kisner, it's been a Spieth. It's been a player of that ilk that's been able to actually make the putts drop when they needed to, that's actually won around here.
Yeah. I'll tell you one thing that really stuck out for me from your preview, Steve, was the bent grass.
What, my
green
spelling?
We've got a spell checker to deal with that. The bent grass green winners historically and how they correlated to this track over the years. And there's an awful lot of players in your list there, which is clearly is quite a long list of players who've won on a pure bent grass track over their career.
12 years.
But there's a lot of correlation there between players that have contended and done well here over the years and your list. So
That's interesting. I mean, listen to this, guys. Since 2008, pure bent grass green victories topped out 7 wins apiece, Rory McIlroy, who makes his tournament debut, and Justin Rose. And then the next highest is 5 PGA Tour wins on bent grass greens: Zach Johnson, Jordan Spieth. So you've got 3 Colonial winners there in the top 4 most winning bent grass green players since 2008.
Yeah. It does strike me as a very bent grass green positive kind of track if you're looking to whittle down a list of players to a smaller shortlist. That's a good place to start, I think, your list though.
That's a huge angle, I also think. You know, if you're in Florida and you've been doing all of your practice in Florida, have you been able to actually practice on bent grass greens?
Yeah. You'd have been stuck.
Are they literally turning up in Texas on Sunday, Monday, going onto the putting surfaces and saying, "This is the first time I've putted on bent grass for 6 months"?
Yeah, and it feels different.
Might put an advantage to those that are based in Texas, you know.
Yeah, could do. Or the Europeans, although, you know, clearly most of the players will have been over in the US for a significant period of time so they're not quarantining, etc.
I wonder. I looked at guys on their seasonal debut and how they'd performed in terms of top 5, top 10s, and I looked at the top of the market in terms of prices. I found Rory McIlroy has never won a season opener. But listen to this. He's finished in the top 5 9 times out of 10. So a 90% success rate, top 5, on his season debut. So I'm just looking at players that can hit the ground running after 5, 6, 7 weeks of non-competitive action at the start of a calendar year, effectively. Next up, Matthew Fitzpatrick. In 6 outings since 2015, he's finished 4 times in the top 5. That's 67%. And actually, you look at Fitzpatrick, the way he plays the game, you would have thought Colonial fits his game quite nicely.
Yeah.
Next up, Louis Oosthuizen. From 10 competitive season openers, he's won 4 times, finishing the top 5 6 times, and in the top 10 8 times. Bearing in mind that he starts most seasons in South Africa against very poor fields, but even so, can clearly hit the ground running competitively after a few months off. Justin Thomas, 50% success rate, top five in across six season openers. And then you get the likes of Webb Simpson at 40% and Xander Schauffele at 40%, top fives. I just thought it was quite interesting.
Yeah, and I think it is an interesting angle to look at this week because clearly those players who are able to hit the ground running, as you say, are going to... It's almost like a post-Christmas restart, isn't it? It will be longer than that stretch than a lot of players won't have played for between the end of a PGA Tour season and the start again in January. So that was typically, 6 weeks or so, whereas this has been double that and all thereabouts. So, but yeah, interesting angle. And I do think there's players who need to get back into that kind of competitive mindset and mould before they can really start to play their best golf.
Before I talk about my selections, Barry, walk me through where you're up to in terms of your betting strategy this week.
I'm trying to get away from the blind dart at the field. It's just so hard to pick one or two things to tune in on as part of your strategy because there's so many variables coming into play this week. So I think I'm kind of going to focus on guys who are a little bit, kind of battlers and fighters. I do like the idea that Spieth, I think he could go well this week. He could come out. Then again, he still has to, I guess, prove it a little bit from his slump. But, somebody like Kevin Kisner, that plays well in the classical courses, has that kind of grit and grind. And, I think it's going to be interesting to see how many guys come out this week absolutely pinpoint sharp with their long game. I think it'll be, the exception rather than the rule to have that this week. So I think that might lend itself to a few more of those kind of scramblers being up the leaderboard. So say like maybe six or seven out of the top 10 being scramblers rather than ball strikers.
Yeah,
that's kind of where my head's at.
If you miss a green this week, you're in a bit of trouble, aren't you? You're Corey Connors type that are absolutely metronomic tee to green, but when they do miss a green, they normally make bogey because they cannot scramble. It's going to be difficult for them, I think, potentially.
Yeah, some interesting dynamics at play.
Unless they're playing so exceptionally well, they're just literally hitting 16, 17 greens around.
Yeah, as I say, I think these greens are going to get firm by the end of the day. So I think they're going to start relatively receptive, and I think they will get...
They are small firm as well.
Yep.
Only 5,000 square feet, which is some of the smallest greens on tour. So you've got to be so precise with your approaches. Mid-iron, of course. I wouldn't even say mid-iron, is it? I think the key area here is about 150 through 175. In terms of yardage.
Yeah.
I read a point Kevin R made. He said something about, all I try and do is hit the white marker in the fairway because I know from 150 and out, there aren't many players better in terms of approaches with irons than me. And that was his strategy last year and he won.
Yeah, and on a track that's 7,200 yards, you can manage your way around to that if that is your game plan.
I must say, I did like Kisner, and statistically, he actually filled the board in terms of what you would look for here. I'm talking also that a lot of those numbers are from last year, but we've seen that with Kevin Na, actually. Statistically, most of his numbers were from the previous season, but just in terms of the shape of player that those stats show you, Kisner is absolutely perfect for around here, as you would know, because he's won around here. Yeah. It's that kind of grinder, isn't it, who's got a very good approach and short game when required and who can clearly putt well. I mean, Kisner and Na are pretty similar, aren't they?
Yeah. Can see the logic.
Who's going to lead us off then in terms of our selections?
Well, I've only got two and one the same as you, so I think you've got four, haven't you? So do you want to kick off with one or two and then we can start to fill in some gaps?
It's not difficult, is it, for me? I can be very boring in my selections, and Webb Simpson is one of those boring sorts that I just couldn't avoid. could not avoid him because statistically he's so damn good. And also, he's actually got a third and a fifth here from his last, I think, three or four outings. It just feels right for me, Simpson. He's first so far this season, par four birdie or better, which isn't so bad on a golf course that only features two par fives. He's great in terms of his proximity. He's seventh on the tour for proximity to hole this year. And also, I think there's something here about holing putts from outside 25 feet. Someone that can hold distance putts makes the difference here. And Simpson was 18th from that range outside of 25 feet last year. And so far, he's top 40 this season. Five of his six victories have been on bent grass or bent grass-topped greens. And he absolutely thrives on par 70s. You don't see too many players that actually get better results on par 70s than par 72s these days.
No, it tends to be one of them. Yeah, it tends to be the players that are either more accurate or shorter, that really aren't able to overpower these fives.
He lives at Quail Hollow, so I would have thought he just literally walks out the his back gate onto the golf course. I wouldn't have thought practicing would have been a problem. I saw an interview with him last week where he said he had been practicing really, really hard of late and he was really ready to go, that Colonial is one of his favourite golf courses that he plays each and every year. And he's in the top 10 in the world. I just thought 22 was a fair price, although I did see a price tweeted out yesterday from an American book. He was up at 30 to 1, which I found absolutely amazing. 30 to 1 on Webb Simpson. Mm. I'd have been all over that like a rash. So, yeah, 22 to 1. When you actually see the fact as well that in that seasonal outing data, Simpson sits, he's had four top fives in 10 attempts and five top tens in those last 10 season openers. You know, so basically, he's hit the top 10 five out of 10 times. I just couldn't turn him away, really. So he was my lead bet this week, Webb Simpson. And also, you do tend to get players here with really obvious course form that just come and win it one year, like Kevin Na did last year.
Yeah, there's a strong correlation with course form. When I look through the list, going back, well, for the last, you know, good, what, 15 years or so, the only player that didn't have a top 20 round here prior to victory was Adam Scott. I think you have to go back all the way to 2001, 2000, something like that. Is it Steve Flesh? Yeah, Steve Flesh was the... No, it's Nick Price, one of the two. My notes are a bit scruffy. But yeah, you have to go back a long way before you find someone who didn't have a top 20 around here before winning. So course form. Well, a decent course result at some point in the past looks like a fair indicator as well.
There's also that stat out there about age, isn't there?
Yeah, the one from Kenny Kim.
Kenny Kim that said something like, since 2001, only Jordan Spieth has won at an age younger than 30. Mm. So Simpson at 34 just fits the mould. Yeah. In fact, half the winners here since 2001 have been over 40.
Yeah, and again, that kind of flies in the face of the stat that or the approach that you were mentioning from Jeff Feinberg earlier in terms of these young kind of young range rats. And I think this epitomises the whole event, and the approach is that there are a lot of factors here that you could build a case or a logic around, and it could be a masterstroke or could be fatally flawed, couldn't it? So it's.
I wonder what the average age of the field was in those years, though. Is it a classical course would attract the classical player who's generally that little bit older?
Mm. Yeah.
Potentially.
And they could see themselves as being able to compete on a more level playing field because the course doesn't overly favour bombers. Mm. You know, yeah. It's a bit more of a level playing field for everyone. So, I think... not saying all bets are off because that's terrible. All bets are on this week. I think the rule book could possibly be discredited a little bit this week.
Well, it's so tempting, isn't it? You got Scotty Scheffler. I mean, I think Scheffler, you know, was priced up. I might be wrong. I should really check before I say this. I'm pretty certain he started up on books. Yeah, one book had him up at 66 to 1, Scotty Scheffler, Boyle Sports, you know. He's now in as short as 33-1. But you can see why. He's played plenty of golf, hasn't he? He's from Dallas, so this is one of his home courses. He's played some fantastic golf as a rookie anyway. He played a couple events, didn't he, in Texas, where he finished first and finished second on the last one. So he's even been playing competitive golf in lockdown. I just couldn't. 40-1 when he's been priced up with Ricky Fowler and Tony Finau, you know, and top elite players. I just couldn't touch it. But Scheffler, you can see this course suiting him beautifully. Colin Morikawa's been playing some superb stuff. The only trouble with Morikawa is if he does miss greens, he does struggle. There are some really young guns. You know, Sung Jae Im again. Is he just going to keep running and running like he has been? There's a lot of young talent playing this week that are right top draw. You know, even the likes of Victor Hovland at 66s. He started working with Pete Cowan, you know, on his short game because he admits that he's scrambling so bad. That's an interesting development.
Yeah, yeah. Clearly focused on improving his game, which is good.
Who's your shortest price then, Paul?
Well, other than your second selection, which I'll let you go through because I've made no notes on him, my shortest selection I can talk to you about is someone you have mentioned already, which is Louis Oosthuizen, 66-1, 8,100 on DraftKings as well, which is interesting, I think.
Yeah.
My approach this week was quite straightforward in that I wanted someone who was bentgrass positive, so I've leaned heavily on your stats in your preview, actually. And also, going back to that point I made a second ago about players having a top 20 finish around here in the past, and only Scott in recent times breaking that trend. So literally, I've chopped the field down to players who have a top 20 here since 2002 and featured on your long list of bentgrass positive players who've had a victory on bentgrass greens. And that got me instantly down from a field of 148 to 33 players, which is a lot more manageable. Now, if the winner comes outside of those 33, of course, I'm stuffed. But that's going to be my approach this week. And that left me with a number of players to really dig into, and one of whom was Louis Oosthuizen, as I say. He passes the two tests. He's bentgrass positive. He's got various wins on the European Tour and the Sunshine Tour in terms of bentgrass greens. Of course, he's got the Open Championship win, which was on a bentgrass mix. He was 19th here on debut back in 2012, 5th here on his last start in 2018. Shot 64-68 over the weekend that week, which was only beaten by two or three players at the very top of the market. Actually, he got to grips with the greens that time. He was 10th for putting average in old money that week, which bodes well for him because clearly he's a more accurate type, high GIR player who tends to not putt particularly well. So seeing a strong putting performance for him on this track in the past is positive. Started the season well again this year, second at the South African Open, 5th in Abu Dhabi. And that backed up some good late season form where he'd finished 3rd at the WGC HSBC Champions, 6th at Ned Bank, 2nd at the Aussie Open as well. Started well at the WGC Mexico but faded. Miscut the Honda and had his perennial injury issues at the Players, so didn't play.
Was it an injury?
Yeah, I think he had a neck twinge as well.
Yeah, and he played 7 holes, didn't he? He was 3 over.
With someone like Louis, and this is going to get this factored into his price and the reason why he's 66, is that he can and does have injury issues. However, the stat that really got me is the one that you quoted a second ago, Steve, is his performance first time out.
Amazing.
Absolutely. He's one of these players who can, and if he's had a rest, and it's rested his back, and it's rested his neck, and it's rested his wrist, or whatever the current ailment happens to be, he can come out of the blocks absolutely flying. As you said, he's won 4 times first time out. Going back.
Yeah, 11, 12, 13, 14, he won the opener on the European Tour down in South Africa. But even since then, let's take it to 2019 and 2020, shall we? As you said, he was second in the South African Open 12th of January this year. And then last year, 2019, played the Abu Dhabi Championship. I think you tipped him up that week, actually.
Yeah, I think so.
And he was 4th in a high class Rolex Series event on the European Tour in Abu Dhabi.
Yeah.
So he starts, he just starts from a period of inactivity on the pace.
Absolutely.
That's fact. So he's a great bet at 66.
I think if you're going to take a chance on a player at that kind of bracket with the extra places that are out there, I took him with Boyle Sports early on with 66. He's at 8 places, a fifth of the odds. And for me, that as an each-way punt, that was... if he has a problem... With his fitness, then so be it. It's not as if you're backing a short 5 or 10 to 1 shot. No. So,
and that's the thing with Louis. If he was priced up at 28 to 1, you'd be going, "Oh, that injury, I wouldn't touch him." But at 66s, it's part of the price, isn't
Absolutely,
it?
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. So yeah, Louis. Louis on my team this week. Any players in that kind of bracket, Barry?
I've gone for Kisner. Just focus on that. You know, his ability to scramble, kind of affinity for that classical style course, you know, one that he's not at a big disadvantage because of a lack of length versus the Bombers. He shows up nicely on your rolling rankings, Steve, for scrambling. How relevant they are, I don't know. I think once a good scrambler, kind of always a good scrambler. So
I agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, and just on that, I don't know. It's a hard week for me to get like super focused in on specifics, but so I've gone with a little bit of partisan personal vibes on it. You know, Graham McDowell, one of those nitty gritty, you know, those gritty golfers, keeps grinding to get the job done. So look, he's available at big odds. I just took the 10 places with Paddy Power and got 125s on that. You know, those are the two real bets. I've thrown a couple of a very small one on Zach Blair because just a fan of his, but you know, excellent putter, which could come in handy, which will, as we know, comes in handy around here.
Yeah, I think the length of the course will help Zach as well because he does tend to struggle on these longer tracks. But a 7-1, 7-2 kind of track is right up his alley, I think.
That's very playable for him. Yeah. And I mean, just you know, the more I started thinking about the scrambling as an angle this week to kind of, let's say, lean on a little bit, you know, Shane Lowry's been tweeting about playing with, you know, Rory McIlroy a lot, sharpening his game. And as we all know, he's one of the best players in the world around the green. He's just got golden hands.
Lowry, though, he's been playing so well under the radar. It's unbelievable. When you look at my strokes gain numbers, Lowry is just all over it like a rash. Tee to green, he was ranking 13th in this field total strokes gain tee to green before the suspension. Yeah, and like you say, top 20 for strokes gained around the green. Wherever I look, Lowry's name was popping up in these stats. But the results weren't great. So clearly the putter hasn't been firing brilliantly.
Well, do you remember what happened when his results weren't great and the game was sort of clicking before the Open Championship? He was putting in three good rounds and one horrific one. He'd have the stats would be good because the three good rounds kind of weighted against the one bad round. But his, you know, he might finish 24th or 33rd, you know, in one of those weeks. And he did that quite a lot and then just tidied it all up for that one week.
It's what he tends to do, though, isn't it? Paul said that in the past. He's actually ranking strokes gained total in this field in the top 18. And you actually look at his results, they're not stellar in any shape or form, but he's just playing consistent golf below the radar. Just needs that sharpness. You know, 11th, 13th, 29th, 21st, his last four finishes this year.
Do you think that's
crazy?
Because he's not going to have to defend his Open Championship title this year. Do you think that takes the pressure off him a little bit? Because you often get this kind of first major hangover, don't you? But particularly up until the point that the anniversary's come round, the defence has been and gone, and players can start to relax a little bit more. And clearly, he's going to have to wait until next July now to defend his title. But whether there's an element of relaxation or I don't know, it'd be interesting to see how Shane develops over the next few weeks.
There's very few better ways to fine-tune your game than practicing and playing money matches against Rory McIlroy.
No.
probably as good a prep as you could have for this.
Yeah.
So that would suggest Shane's got a Florida base these days.
Yeah. Yeah, he's there. So, you know, I guess the only thing they're missing is the bent grass putting, but I was going to jump in earlier when we were discussing that. I was wondering, you know, is there anything about, is it easier to jump from Bermuda to Bankgrass or from Bankgrass to Bermuda? Like in my head, it'd be easier to jump to from Bermuda to Bankgrass because you're just deleting the grain from the equation. But when you're going from Bankgrass to Bermuda, you're having to add the grain into the equation. That's an extra element of chaos, you know, as far as my mind would think about it.
We certainly get a jump, and Steve, this kind of, you know, a couple of months back at this point, that point in the year, each year, Steve kind of highlights to me a few players who could well start to pop up having moved from the Bermuda greens to Bentgrass, and vice versa, you know, at different points in the year.
The Wunderkind, Joachim Niemann. I expect him to pop up this week.
Yeah, and if you look at his headline form, you'd say no. But awful. If he does, that kind of validates the point. And I think the point is that some players can adapt more readily. And you know, it may be the grasses they grew up at home or practiced on, you know, more as in their developmental points to their golfing career. Or some people just feel more comfortable in it. Full stop. Just get on better with particular times. We shall see.
Three for me. Statistically, this guy is playing some great golf so far this year. Fifth in his last two outings at invitational status level tournaments, so big tournaments. Joel Damon. I took 80-1 on Damon, a point each way with Ball Sports on eight places each way. Statistically, he's just very impressive. 24 strokes going off the tee so far this year on the PGA Tour. 22nd on approach. 11th strokes gained tee to green. That is elite level playing from Joel Damon. You just look at his record as well. Second at the John Deere Classic. His first ever top 10 on the PGA Tour was at the nearby TPC Las Colinas, past 70, where they used to play the Byron Nelson. I think he's Bentgrass positive, Damon. I could just see that run continuing this week. He was also second after 36 holes at the Scottsdale Arizona Open that they played in mid-April, when I think he went off at 11-2 favourite, something stupid like that. But Damon is playing some cracking stuff right now. I also got involved with Harris English, point each way. I took 66-1 eight places with English. There was a little bit of 80-1 about. Let's just check, see if it's still available out there. 80-1 on Harris English. Would that be correct? I'm scrolling.
Sea of Blue, 70-1.
70-1 now. Harris English, if you were prepared to take less places. English is another one, isn't he? He was second in a tournament they played on Sea Island last week with, I think he was partnered with Jim Furyk. But he's just playing some outstanding golf. 16th at Scottsdale, 17th at PGA National, 9th at Bay Hill last time out. He shot a 65, I think it was, to be second to Hideki Matsuyama at the Players' Championship on Thursday. He's just playing exceptional stuff, and I think he's finished fifth and second here in 2012 and 2016. So I think English, if he keeps that momentum going forward, lack of crowds might help him in terms of his mental state. I can see English just continuing to play very, very nicely. He's up 200 spots so far this year, Harris English.
Yeah,
playing some great stuff. And for me, I've always said this, Paul. He is that kind. If I see English at somewhere like a Houston or a Augusta, somewhere long past 72, he doesn't really interest me. But a short past 70, I think that's right in his wheelhouse, Harris English. The other one I've backed, who's more elite level, and I know that you've backed him as well, Paul, I can't believe I've gone for Webb Simpson up top, and then I've backed him up with Matt Kuchar. It's like, Jesus, how boring. But it's that kind of golf tournament for me.
Yeah.
Just someone that hits fairways and has that old-style maturity just to keep grinding. And you actually look at his record around here, Kuchar. 9th, 16th, 2nd, 6th, 12th. He actually has an average of 68.89, which ranks joint 4th for players who have played more than 3 renewals here. And then you look at his record at Harbortown, Hilton Head, which, as he quotes, he says, oh, here is not too dissimilar. It's tight, it's tree-lined. The two courses are almost, identical. He's finished 10th, 7th, 1st, 5th, 9th, 11th and 2nd at Harbour Town. So, you know, I just think it's right in Kuchar's wheelhouse. 2nd at Riviera back in February, which was his second last outing, where he finished 2nd at Tiger's Invitational Tournament. So he's clearly been playing some decent golf. And if you're looking at first season opening statistics, so again, looking at players that have had inactivity and how they do on their season opener, Kuchar has actually finished in the top 10 four times in his last 10 outings. So he can hit the ground running early on. So yeah, Kuchar for me, Simpson and Kuchar up top, backed up with English and Damon at mid prices.
Yeah, no, I like Kuchar. I think he's a
43 years of age, Paul.
Yeah, it fits the bill on an awful lot of angles this week. And when I was doing my analysis was far more rudimentary than what you go through, Steve. But the two players that ticked every box I was looking for were Webb Simpson. Oh, I've said I can't back, but we'll probably go and win now. And Matt Kuchar were the two that were ticking every single box. I've got one more that I've backed at a longer price, who is Brendan Todd. Now, this goes back to a point you just made, Steve, about TPC Four Seasons, Las Colinas, which I think holds a lot of correlation to this particular track. Bentgrass Greens, par 70, 7,166 yards, Texas. There's a lot of correlation there in terms of this particular track. 2014 was when he won that particular event. And he was fifth here at Colonial that very same year. You go back, Brendan Todd was in 2014, he was around the top 50 in the world. And
he was, yeah.
Clearly dropped off a little bit since. But then he's very, very close to getting back into the top 50. I think he's 54th right now, courtesy of those two wins at the back end of 2019. Bermuda Championship and the Mike Over, wasn't it, that he won back end of 2019. And for me, it looked like
consecutive, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it was. Yeah, you know, and kind of came from nowhere and then just went bang, bang, didn't he?
What is he on DraftKings, Todd?
6,800.
Wow, he's going to be absolutely annihilated at that price, isn't he?
Yeah, he's going to form quite a few parts of my teams. It looked like he was edging back to some form again before the break. He was progressive form, 56th at the Genesis, 37th at the WGC Mexico, 18th at the Arnold Palmer before it all stopped. And again, going back to some requirements in terms of being an accurate type, that's exactly what he is. His irons were off. That's the one thing you could read into his stats and why he wasn't playing particularly well at the start of this year prior to the suspension. But he's had time, you know, 3 months to sort out his approach play. And if he can get that sorted coming into this week, I think he's probably worth a punt at 150s. So I'm quite happy to take that on personally.
I'm not overly impressed with the price, but do you think there's anything in Christian Bezuidenhout again this week? He won his European Tour victories at Valderrama, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Tight, claustrophobic, bent grass greens.
Yeah, it is. I think in terms of difficulty, I think he's more suited to a more difficult, lower, or higher winning score, effectively.
Right, I've got you.
Than what we've got here.
More technical.
Yeah, something more technical, absolutely. So if it was 6-8 under, something like that, then I think that could be well worth a look for someone like Bezuidenhout. He was in the mix, wasn't he? I forget which event it was now at the start of the year and drifted away. And
I think he was in the mix at Bay Hill, wasn't he, with Hatton? But he faded in the final round. I think it all got a bit too much for him on the PGA Tour. Yeah. The other thing was, though... even because he could then got to play the actual players, didn't he? And he shot a 65 in the opening round there. There was Bezuidenhout, Harris English, and Siwoo Kim. Nod, nod, wink, wink. Next week, RBC Heritage. shot 65s with Matsuyama's amazing 63 before they scrubbed the tournament. So, you know, Bezuidenhout, English, and Siwoo Kim, nod, nod, wink, wink, next week, RBC Heritage. They are, you know, they clearly found a little bit of form just before this all shot down.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, he's a very strong player and is a player that you should certainly keep in mind, I think. But yeah, for me, I've got him in that technical category, which would be where I'm looking to back him over the future when he pops up in those kind of events. I'll need to wait and see what the draw looks like, but a couple of first round leader players that I'll be looking for: Rory Sabatini at 100-1, Charlie Hoffman. You'd never have guessed that. 110-1. Going back to this link with Lascalinas, Steve, Sabatini's got performed there. He's won there.
Yeah,
he's been first round leader there in the past, I believe, or very close to. Yeah, he was first round leader back in 2003. It was.
I know he's Slovakia's number one golfer, but clearly he lives in Dallas.
Yeah.
So it kind of makes sense. These are his home courses, effectively. Absolutely.
So if I want an early tee time, ideally, so I need to wait and see what the tee times look like. But
he shot 67 at the Players as well.
Yeah,
it's, five under first round. So Sabatini, he's playing nicely.
Well, I counted up Sabatini from his first round scores over the last 32 starts. 9 of them have been top tens after the first day. So 9 out of 32. He's one of those players that really does get out of the blocks very quickly. And doesn't
crazy.
Yeah, it doesn't tend to do much from there. But you know, as per Matt Every, if he can go out and shoot 63 in the first round, he may well reward you, if not outright, for a share or at least an each way spot for first round leader. So hopefully he gets a nice plum early tee time, and we can fill our boots at 100-1.
Anything else to add, gentlemen?
Are we done? I wanted to see, could I get some odds on all four of Steve's golfers showing up on Thursday in beige chinos?
Yeah, true.
I mean, like,
I can't argue that they are plain, aren't they?
Wow, Steve. Like, I mean, I could not have gone and picked four. But yeah, plain is the word.
The one I didn't add, which I know is our friend Ryan Palmer, who's on my "We'll Never Back Again" list. So I couldn't add Palmer to the team.
Yeah, there's some...
Of the elite guys, the ones I came closest to but didn't tip up, I think DeChambeau's got a chance. I mean, it's obvious enough. He just doesn't seem to have been hitting it close enough pre-suspension. I think Patrick Reed clearly hits the ground running so often at Kapalua. Mm-hmm. I don't think this will put him off. He's a Texas boy. I'd have thought winning at Colonial would be a big deal for him. The trouble with Reed is he's just so inaccurate off the tee. I think that eventually catches up with you around here. I mean, we know his short game's outstanding, but if he starts off hitting fairways, I think Reed is a proper contender. Yeah. The other one I always have a close look at Colonial, but never seems to get a top 10 here, is Mark Leishman. Those are the ones I really focused on at the top of the leaderboard. But yeah, pretty beige, has to be said.
Well, let's...
I should have added Jason Duffner.
Yeah, well, to be fair,
or Ches Reavie, someone like that, you know, really,
Duffner and Reavie, in terms of building my DraftKings teams, they're both going to take a bit of ownership, I think.
How many are you having a few pops at the millionaire?
I am going to have a little go at it, yeah. All this pent up frustration, Barry, of not having a play for the last 3 months, I will be attacking that $1 million prize. So you may or may not see me next week.
Yeah.
He might be having to move his money in overseas from Boston.
Yeah.
Good problem to have.
Yeah, be awful.
Wouldn't it just?
I won't be able to get him on Skype Monday morning. Paul, where are you? There's like no reply whatsoever. It's been a pleasure. It's been such a pleasure actually pulling this podcast together this week. So I'm sure within a few weeks, if the PGA Tour is still playing, it won't feel like a pleasure anymore. But it's been so good after these 90 days to talk to you guys and to actually get into the golf betting this week. It's been absolutely fantastic. Yep. I appreciate your time, gentlemen.
No, enjoyed it. Best of luck, chaps, with your bets and your teams this week.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. Golf, full tournament golf on TV. Let's go.
Can we twist your arm and get you on next week for the RBC Heritage?
We have to, like, because we've got so many tearful stories about Siwoo Kim and the year. I mean, how could we not?
It's got to be. How can you ignore
how
that?
How could we not relive that?
Classic stuff. But I appreciate your time, gentlemen. Thank you very much. And thank you to listeners. As I say at the top of the show, subscribe to the show. And if you could leave us a Apple podcast review, that would be so appreciated. All of the content that we've been discussing today available via links in the description box. Goodbye. Thanks to you.